Down to Dunk Podcast.
I would like to welcome Brad Graham, the author of the new book, The Backpack Baller, to the Down to Dunk Podcast. Brad, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, Brad, tell us a little bit about yourself and then about your book.
Okay, not a problem. I guess vital information about me is I'm male. I enjoy long walks on the beach. No, that's not what your listeners want to hear. What kind of podcast is this again? I guess I'm a 32-year-old graphic designer and editorial contributor, author, at least aspiring author at this point. And I've been involved with the media for about 10 years now, you know, produced my fair share of NBA magazines and thought it was about time that I rolled the dice on a full-length feature book.
That's awesome. So tell me, what's the most surprising thing about Kevin Durant that you learned?
For me personally, the most surprising thing was his, you know, childhood friendship with Michael Beasley. I mean, I think it's been well documented that those two kids, you know, grew up together or at least were, you know, in the same neighborhood. But just sort of, I guess, getting a real understanding from both parties, from Mike, and then hearing Kevin sort of relay the stories about the sort of things that they would do as kids and how much actual time they had spent together. And, you know, I'm not sure if people are aware, but, you know, like they would hang out and have breakfast at Kevin's house and Mike's mum would drop him off. You know, they would catch the bus to school together. Like they were really sort of... I'm not going to say best friends as kids, but there was a little span there where, you know, they probably saw each other as much as they saw their own families. So I just think it's fascinating from a mathematical standpoint, the two kids with sort of, you know, from the same neck of the woods were able to both achieve their NBA dreams. I don't know what the maths are on that one. I'm not one of those algorithm experts. But, yeah, I just found that sort of stuff sort of fascinating when you, as I'm sure you've experienced over the years, that when you get a chance to sort of sit down with these NBA stars, and as amazing as they are on the court, it's when you sort of uncover the human sort of side of them and you know, start to find out who they are as people and what's influenced them that you start to sort of really, I think, grow maybe more attached is the wrong word, but you start to definitely relate to them on a very sort of base level.
That's really cool. So tell me, what's your takeaway from Kevin, like from spending time with Kevin Durant? What kind of guy is he? What do you think of Kevin Durant after getting to write a book about him and spend some time with him?
Look, I've found that as odd as this may be, there just has not been a single person that's had anything negative to say about Kevin other than LeBron James. And all that he said that was negative was all very tongue-in-cheek. So, look, everyone who's come across Kevin has just found him to be an upstanding, respectful citizen and has sort of shown him the same in reverse. I mean, I don't know if that's, you know, entirely accredited to his upbringing. I mean, obviously everyone knows that his mom has a strong influence over him. Mm-hmm. But he just sort of carries himself with real sort of character and you know, sort of goes out of his way to be accommodating and really professional. And, you know, he still gets a chance to sort of be a 25-year-old or, you know, as has been over the course of the last 2 years in terms of putting this book together. I mean, you know, he still has his moments where, you know, he's impressionable by all means and all measures. But, you know, for the most part, he's always accommodating and just a real sort of delight to work with. And that's what you find, you know, whether speaking to guys from USA Basketball, speaking to the Thunder staff, you know, teammates, you know, legends of the game, like everyone who I've sort of interviewed and media included have all just sort of spoken so highly of him. And it was almost like a challenge to try and uncover that one person who sort of had a bone to pick with him. But mm-hmm. That person just doesn't seem to exist. And you know, who knows, maybe we'll find in 5 years that you know, Kevin and Westbrook will split and their perfect marriage will expose something, you know,
Right.
And not only do Thunder fans not want to see that, but I'm sure, you know, NBA fans at large don't want to see a Kobe Shaq sort of split I don't know, but Kevin's, you know, a private, quiet guy, and it's still, I guess it's, for me, having sort of covered the NBA for you know, the length of time that I have, it's still fascinating and almost perplexing to see Kevin still overwhelmed by his media responsibilities and, you know, still kind of genuinely shocked that people think of him in the same vein that they think of as, you know, either greats that are playing today or you know, on the all-time scale. So, I don't know, I guess credit to him. He's remained incredibly humble, and maybe that just makes him, you know, a perfect fit for the Thunder team.
Yeah. Who would you say is Kevin's best friend on the Thunder team?
Oh, that's a good question. It's actually changed over the years, I guess. Mm-hmm. This season, you want me to?
Yeah. Well, go through the seasons and then tell me who his best friends have been in the past, and then who is this season.
Right. Well, I mean, this is again from what I've gathered. You know, he's gone from Jeff Green, Royal Ivy, Joe Smith. You know, him and James Harden have been very close. I was actually sort of surprised that you know, he seemed closer to Harden than he did to Westbrook. I don't know. I thought that. For just a personal understanding for how, you know, NBA relationships work, that one sort of surprised me. But maybe, again, the Westbrook relationship is, you know, a very on-court, very public thing, whereas I guess behind closed doors, or maybe, you know, who they, you know, maybe James and Kevin have a closer understanding of one another. But, that's been sort of interesting to see Kevin's attitudes change as his friends have been essentially traded away from the team.
Yeah.
But then this season, I don't know, that's a good question. You know, to be perfectly honest, I haven't actually asked him who he's been closest to this particular campaign. So, you know, if you've got any input there, I'm, you know, happy to hear it. I mean, from what you've seen and from interactions, you know, I don't want to be here throwing out names and then have it come back and you know, bite me in the butt. So
yeah, it's kind of hard to peg this season. It feels like, I don't know. I see him talking to Ryan Gomes on the bench a lot. I don't know if that's just happens to be where he's sitting or what it is. And I honestly don't know the answer.
Right. I mean, look, maybe he's in a position where he no longer has that BFF that we're used to seeing him have. And, you know, from how it looks from your point of view, might be how it looks from mine. And that is, you know, he's somehow, Kevin, I think, has finally understood that it's no longer that brotherhood where it's us against the world. He now, you know, not treats it like a cold business, but definitely understands that, you know, it's no longer a college atmosphere for this Thunder team. It is now a professional basketball outfit. And I don't know, I guess maybe too, he's also just keeping, you know, his cards close to the chest. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, I would like to see him and would like to think that him and, you know, Steve Adams and Reggie Jackson and these guys, you know, play pinball machines together and, you know, do all the kind of cool stuff. But I don't know. It would be fascinating, I think, to see. And I don't know. I mean, you, with your experience with the NBA, you know, I guess let me ask you. I mean, are you surprised that at sort of how much these guys either do spend time together off court or how much they are actually distant off court? Because, you know, I guess like any business, you don't always have to be friends with your coworkers.
Yeah, and I wonder with Kevin in particular, maybe he's becoming more of just like the leader of the team. And sometimes the very leader of the team isn't best friends with anybody around. And I don't know if that's the case or if their personalities just don't match. I don't know. I'm not media credentials or anything, but I've seen Russell Westbrook in public a few times and have gone up and talked to him, and he's pretty cold. He didn't seem like a guy like Kevin. Like whenever you see Kevin in public, they're extremely different. They have great chemistry on the court. It doesn't really surprise me that they're not best buds. They just don't seem like guys who would mesh real well. I don't know. I don't know about Kevin and his friendships, but it's kind of cool to see, you know, as much as I dislike the Miami Heat, how much those guys love being around each other and just kind of the chemistry that they have on and off the court that you see. I think that's tremendous, and I think that helps. And I would like to see Kevin do more of that stuff with this current Thunder team because I do believe that this is the best Thunder team yet. So I'd like to see more of that, but I think that maybe he's just taken the role of the leader of the team. He's kind of the head of the team, and maybe it's a little lonely at the top kind of deal. I don't know.
Right, and maybe that speaks to more about the fact that, that the Thunder are actually run like a traditional basketball team in that Presti builds the roster, Brooks coaches them, the players play. Whereas Miami feels a little bit more like the players and maybe, you know, in conjunction with Pat Riley are having sort of a say in what the basketball decisions are. I mean, as it's been well documented, you know, that Olympic team in Beijing when, you know, Bosch and Wade and LeBron all got together and you know, whether or not those rumors are true and made this decision to all sort of form this super team, you know, that seems to have played a part. So, I mean, look, I guess what this probably boils down to is Kevin hasn't necessarily been allowed to choose his co-workers yet, but... Mm-hmm. Who knows what will happen the next time, you know, negotiations come for contract extensions and whatnot. But I think you're also right. I mean, Westbrook is a much different character. And I mean, that's not in any shape, way or form detrimental. It's just he's a different person. And but it is also fantastic to see them, you know, whoever they are away from the court doesn't necessarily determine who they are on the court. So I love that professionalism and the fact that, like, these guys, I think both, you know, understand that their best chance of success is having the other one on side. So, and again, that's been another fascinating, you know, discovery from doing all the research and multiple interviews with people around the league and the team. It's that, you know, Kevin really doesn't seem like he can quite grasp why Russell, you know, cops all of the flack for the team's, you know, missteps or failures and you know, completely throws himself under the bus and says, you know, we lose, it's on me. And Russ is out there, you know, busting his butt trying to get us, you know, home. But he misses a jump shot here or there in the playoffs and all of a sudden the world comes crashing in on Russ and it's somehow only his fault. So, you know, it is good. I mean, as you said, Kevin being that team leader now, he seems like, yeah, he's forever sort of being the one trying to play the bulletproof vest and let Russ kind of, you know, be free to sort of roam and not, you know, be under that cloud of continuous media scrutiny.
Yeah. You kind of touched on this a little bit. Do you think that KD will leave for the Rockets like Jalen Rose predicted?
I think we live in a world now where people latch on to comments a little bit more than they probably should. Mm-hmm. I don't see how he's going to leave the Rockets. I don't see how he's going to play for the Rockets with Dwight Howard there. I think there could be a you know, a different makeup in the league. I'm talking about the league in general could look differently in 2 or 3 years' time.
Oh yeah.
So there's still a lot to be played out. I think that, you know, in isolation, Kevin playing for the Rockets might have some traction if you want to sort of look at it from his friendship with Harden and, you know, Kevin maybe feeling hard done by because of the fact that that trade was such a surprise to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I just don't see it. Nothing about my experience or my understanding of the situation would lead me to sort of conclude that Kevin's just going to sort of bail on the team after, you know, spending, you know, all this time claiming that you know, he's happy to be at the Thunder and he seems like he's playing like he wants to be at the Thunder. So I don't think, you know, and again, coming back to Dwight Howard, who seemed, and Carmelo Anthony's another great example, like these guys think that they're bigger and better than the team that they play on.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow defer the blame if the team isn't successful. And I think the inverse is true of Kevin. So, you know, yes, he wants to win and yes, he wants to bring a banner to Oklahoma City. And I think that he actually will. And that, you know, before this contract's up, but it just, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's feasible given the current situation. I think the Rockets would love to have him, but
yeah. You know, and I don't even know if the Rockets, I mean, Dwight Howard is not the player he was in 2009 and there's no telling what kind of player he's going to be in 2016. I mean, the Thunder may be the title contender that year, and it may be a no-brainer for him to just resign. I mean, you're right. People love to think about the future and like to predict things, and I don't feel like this is a LeBron James situation. LeBron James was the best player on his team. Wasn't named LeBron James, was Mo Williams, and there are several players better than Mo Williams right now on the Thunder team. So I don't feel like that's a comparable situation, and I hope that people understand that. You know, Presti is brilliant and has put together an outstanding roster, and I think that he will continue to do so. And I just think people need to settle down and not listen to all that yet.
Right, right. And it becomes this classic case of barroom talk ends up being recorded on YouTube, you know, through, you know, Jalen Rose on Grantland or whatever it was. And you know, I'm sure Jalen's got his particular, you know, reasons for wanting to sort of make a claim like that. But, yeah, I mean, I probably don't, you know, I don't know if he expected it to get as much sort of airplay as it has. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like it is just odd. And I think, you know, the conversation shouldn't be had about Durant. It should be had about Kevin Love in Minnesota. It should be had about mm-hmm. Anthony Davis in New Orleans. Like, there are other guys that I think are in situations that aren't as fruitful as what KD's currently is. So, yeah, it seems really odd. And you touched on LeBron. I mean, he left because he went to greener pastures. I mean, in the West, mm-hmm. unless Durant ends up in San Antonio, it's hard to see how, you know, any other team sort of offers him a better situation than the one he's in right now. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, so much is sort of yet to be determined, but yeah, he just doesn't come across as the guy who's just going to sort of bail to a conference foe just because he's friends with one guy or because, you know, Daryl Morey has crunched the numbers and all of a sudden it makes sense to have KD there. But, and you know, coming back to the early point about building super teams, you know, Durant has never had that rapport on the Olympic teams with Dwight Howard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like, you know, I mean, and again, you know, if you saw it, you know, at the London Olympics, if KD and Howard were hanging out and were BFFs, then you would start to sort of go, well, this doesn't look good. But there just hasn't been any real indicator other than some throwaway comment by Jalen Rose that mm-hmm. this is going to happen. And if that's the case, then I really think somebody should be giving Jalen Rose a GM's job.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like, because you and I can sit here and make claims about perfect roster situations and you know, other predictions. But again, it's not helpful to anyone. And, you know, I'm sure it's caused a little anxiety in Oklahoma City. But, you know, I guess, and that's the nature of the 24-hour opinion cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it's worth Thunder fans kind of necessarily at this point sort of freaking out about it the way, you know, LeBron forced Cleveland fans to freak out.
Yeah, I agree. Let's shift gears a little bit. Tell me your favorite NBA team.
That's a very interesting question. My friends continually mock me for this because I don't actually have one. In high school, I was a huge Atlanta Hawks fan, mainly because I'd grown up loving Dominique Wilkins. And that actually has something to do with how I ended up, I guess, developing this man crush on Kevin Durant because – small forwards have always been my favorite position, just the most fascinating aspect to NBA play, I think, just because of the versatility and the Swiss Army knife kind of approach. And so, yeah, grew up a Hawks fan. Then once Wilkins, you know, got traded, it kind of broke my heart. And although I stuck around for maybe another 5 years following the Hawks until the late 90s, you know, I just didn't latch on to any one particular franchise. And then in 2005, Andrew Bogut got drafted by Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of became a Bucks fan by default just because of the local ties, you know, given that we're both Australians. But, yeah, I don't know. I would probably have to sort of say that, you know, between Wilkins and Durant, I actually had a serious man crush on Paul Pierce for a while there. So the Celtics were, you know, probably, again, another default team that I liked because that was his you know, his employer. But I don't know. I guess as it stands right now, everybody kind of associates me with the Thunder, and I would probably have to say that I followed that team more in the last sort of, you know, 3 years than I have any other team since, you know, the Hawks in high school. So, I'll go with the Thunder as my favorite team, but okay. But I'm gonna do it a little reluctantly just because, you know, I don't bleed the orange, blue, navy blue and yellow or whatever odd combination the Thunder ended up deciding upon. But you know, yeah,
I think our listeners will like that answer, even as not as you were.
No. And I guess it's, you know, it's probably the same for any, you know, people fortunate enough to sort of live in a city with an NBA team. Like, I think it's easy to sort of just gravitate towards that team.
Yeah.
And there are those fans, I'm sure, who are just general NBA fans, which, you know, unfortunately I have to be grouped in with, but I think that's at times, you know, kind of a lame title. I find it like people who say that they like all kinds of music. It's kind of like, yeah, I follow every NBA team. It's like, well, really? Like, pick a side. Come on, man. Like,
that's funny. I can relate. I mean, I grew up in Oklahoma City, so we didn't have a team when I was a kid, and I really liked Shaq. I mean, that was my favorite player, and I followed him from the Magic to the Lakers, you know, to the Heat, and then to the Suns. You know, I have all these Shaq jerseys, and you know, I just love, you know, watching him play. And that's kind of where my love for the game started, was watching Shaquille O'Neal play. And then we had the Thunder come, and you know, it was a no-brainer, a team with Kevin Durant. I mean, that's got to be your favorite team if they're, you know, 10 miles playing 10 miles from your house. So
actually, you know, here's a fascinating question for you, you know, because during all the historical research and sort of trying to place Kevin Durant on some sort of scale, if that's even possible, given that his career isn't complete yet, as a Shaq fan, I mean, I know this is somewhat off topic, but do you feel like he ever sort of failed to maximize his full potential? Do you ever think that taking those regular seasons off kind of hurt his standing as arguably the best center to ever play the game?
Yeah, for sure. It did. Because, I mean, he made it known that he wanted to do other things, and he did other things. You know, he made rap albums and he was in movies in the off season, and he would use the regular season to get in shape. And, you know, the one season that he didn't was the year that he won the MVP. And I think that he could have done that multiple seasons had he been, had, you know, the mentality of a Michael Jordan, where it was just, you know, basketball and only basketball. But yeah, as a human being, and as, you know, just for his overall success, it didn't hurt him at all, because, you know, he is where he is and he's won championships and he won an MVP. And, but as a basketball player, yeah, I think that his just wanting other things definitely hurt his basketball career. Cause he could have destroyed records and they could have won more titles. And if he wasn't, you know, if him and Kobe could have settled their stuff, can you imagine Shaq and Kobe for more years to come? I mean, they would have at least won one or two more championships, you'd have to think. And they would, I think without that conflict, they would have beaten the Pistons that year too. So I think that for sure, Shaq did not maximize the skills and just the overall dominance that he had. I mean, he changed the entire league. You know, guys like Todd McCullough were in the league for a long time just because Shaq was in the league. So I don't know. I could talk about Shaq all day, but I do not think he maximized his basketball talents. And but he was still, to his credit, he was, you know, one of the best players of all time.
Yeah, right. And it is fascinating because I guess we, you know, I don't know how far, you know, in terms of ages and stuff for a lot of the listeners, but you know, people who grew up through the 90s and saw the rise of Shaq, and you know, people do, I think, you know, credit Michael Jordan with having a huge influence over a lot of things. But people, I think, also forget that, you know, Shaq not so much brought the extracurricular activities to the game, but definitely showed that it was possible to balance the two. And especially once he'd gotten, you know, to the later stages of his Orlando career and then obviously into the Lakers. And you know, and I think that's something that Durant has been able to manage, coming back to that, you know, quite well. I mean, there's a whole chapter, sorry, in the book about, you know, the fact that he's this leading man now, and that he does, you know, whether or not Thunderstruck's a, you know, success, you know, on DVD or at the cinema or whatever, but, you know, 5 years into the league and he was already, you know, in a feature film, you know, he's already, you know, appeared on multiple rap albums, whether it's Wally or whether it's, you know, obviously, you know, collaborating with Steven Jackson and doing various other things. You know, he's made no apologies for building his home studio in his house and, you know, spending time making, you know, hip hop backing tracks and all the rest and, you know, Foot Locker ads and the rest of it. So, you know, I think it's funny that, you know, as fans, we sometimes, I think, forget that you know, Shaq had a bigger influence on things than maybe we understand, or opened doors that maybe were closed to certain NBA players beforehand, and became a personality as much as he was a player. And yeah. And I think, you know, maybe indirectly that's influenced Durant in many ways. But the counter to it, of course, is that, as we've seen, Durant doesn't take a single game off. I mean, there is no Shaq approach. You know, he seems like he's never lacking motivation and sees everything as a work in progress. So it is interesting to see sort of the marrying almost of two worlds, you know, like that Jordan love of the game and solely a love of the game at the cost of almost all else. And then the Shaq sort of personality and Yeah, maybe we're going to look back in 15 years and realize that KD was some sort of, you know, perfect combination of the two and the right level of humble and everything else. So,
he's fascinating, and I don't think Oklahoma City fans, you know, stop to think how blessed we are to have him, to be able to go and watch him, you know, 41 times during the season. That's a pretty huge gift given to this city, and a guy who has, you know, knock on wood, stayed healthy and has improved every single year. I mean, he's a fascinating guy, and he's a huge, huge help to this city in general. It's big time for Oklahoma City to have this guy.
Right. And I'm sure, you know, the only other franchise that probably can, you know, tip the hat or, you know, give you that sort of sneaky wink is the San Antonio Spurs faithful. Mm-hmm. You know, and they've been lucky enough to have, you know, what, Tim Duncan for 15 odd years. And yeah, I mean, it is good to see that the Thunder are actually a title contender. I mean, I'm sure the worst fear for Thunder fans when the team relocated was that you would end up becoming, you know, a cousin of the Minnesota Timberwolves and, you know, exceptionally talented, you know, core players, but just never able to sort of compete in a conference that was really deep. So, as you say, I mean, you know, you get to show up to the arena 41 times a year and, you know, soak in the atmosphere. And that's another thing too. I mean, you know, just from an outsider's perspective, I mean, the fact that the city has been so embracing of the team and, you know, along with probably the Golden State Warriors, you know, you have the most intimidating home court, you know, in basketball, especially in pro basketball. I think that's where, you know, the marriage works out. I mean, I think the fans, you know, understand, you know, that you have something special in KD. And I think KD understands that he's playing for, you know, a fan base that gets that, you know, and respects the fact that he's there to help sort of bring what he can to the city. So, I don't know, it might come back as the perfect storm in you know, 5 years' time. And we'll know how much you miss KD when he's not there anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm, for sure. A couple of Thunder questions for you. What are your thoughts on Steven Adams?
Oh, I, you know, being somebody who's from down under, I think it's great having Steve Adams, you know, in the Thunder lineup. You know, I think that he's going to be good for the team going forward. Another guy, I mean, he just has such size. It's, you know, they talk about, you know, not being able to teach, you know, bulk and length. And you talked about, you know, 7-footers having extended careers because they were there to be sort of Shaq neutralizers. I think Steve Adams has a little bit of dog in him, and I think that's a good thing. You know, I think the collegiate experience that he was able to get is only going to help him. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think he's coming along faster than maybe most people thought he would, you know, already clocking, you know, significant minutes. And, look, I just like the fact that you know, Steve Adams is there. And anybody who knows anything about, you know, Kiwis knows that this is real fish out of water stuff for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is for me anyway, fascinating to see, you know, somebody from the other side of the globe sort of rubbing shoulders and standing side by side with NBA All-Stars. And, you know, physically, you know, he's absolutely the part, but he just grew up in a world that's so alien to the NBA that, it always, and it, the same thing happened with Andrew Bogut, I guess, to a large extent when he was there. I mean, I don't know if Steve Adams has, you know, quite got that level of talent, but, you know, he's definitely, I think, going to carve out, you know, a lengthy NBA career. And again, if he can stay healthy, there's no reason why he can't be earning tens of millions of dollars when it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love Steven Adams here for sure. Just some quick thoughts on the Russell Westbrook injury. What were your initial thoughts?
I guess surprise was the first thing that hit me, given that I didn't know the severity of what was going to needed to happen. I mean, you know, he looked pretty good for the most part over the first 20 to 25 games. And after Derrick Rose went down, I thought, oh, phew, you know, like it was kind of that huge sort of sigh of relief that Westbrook had bounced back so good, so quick. And then to see him have to sort of step away, you know, the way that he has. And again, I don't know who knew about it or whatnot, but it just seemed like, yeah, okay, you're going to get the knee cleaned out and going to rest. And it's the other knee now that's causing him, you know, it's swelling or whatever it was, I guess the specifics of it are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't want to see any player of that level have to miss extended time, but I'm also of the belief that it's absolutely okay with sitting him now if it means that you're going to get him healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's frustrating because this Thunder team was just rolling. I mean, they look like the best team in the league easily. It was completely frustrating. But I'm trying to stay positive, and kind of my view is Reggie Jackson, if he can get 30 minutes a night, he's going to be a killer come the playoffs. And Jeremy Lamb's going to get more shots too. And I think that those two guys getting more and more experience come April is extremely important to this team progressing throughout the playoffs. So if there's any silver lining, that's it. But it is it's just a bummer. It sucks.
Well, but and again, I mean, you know, with the specific injury to Westbrook, I don't think – I mean, this sounds very almost voluntary. So, I mean, Rose went down, and that has actually derailed Chicago and their long-term plans.
Yeah.
This is not a situation that's similar to that. I mean, this you know – and it's not even like the fact that you know, Kobe with LA has had to sort of, you know, reassess things, or he's had to sort of take a leave of absence to sort of rest his body because of age and everything else. With Russ, it seems like it's just, look, we're just going to do this. It's almost clinical. It needs to be done, and we'll be back, you know, better and stronger than ever. And as you said, like, giving those sort of manufactured minutes, or, you know, kind of artificially giving experience to, you know, guys like Reggie Jackson and Jeremy Lamb can only be good for the Thunder, and it can only help with chemistry, and can only, as you said, like, build confidence for the team. And if they can continue to win without Russ, I mean, it just goes to show what kind of roster it is that Presti's built, and maybe we should start to give a little more credit to Scott Brooks, because I know at times Brooks has looked kind of flat as a coach, and I've wondered if he's kind of coasted on the talent of his stars. But if he can manage to sort of get this team to sort of play and compete at that level and get production out of them without Russ there, then again, you know, the coaching staff is upholding their end of the bargain, and, you know, Less Russ probably means, you know, more shots for everyone else. So, you know, maybe we will see, you know, a couple more 30-point nights from Reggie Jackson. And I always hate to see players develop like Jackson has, only to see them get poached by someone else, you know. Like, it's it is one of those frustrating things where it is that double-edged sword. It's like, give him too many minutes and he looks too good, and and again, he might turn out to be, you know, just like Eric Bledsoe. You know, maybe it is a case where he can't stay behind Russ for, or, you know, the backcourt with Seth Alosha forever. Maybe he does deserve at some point in the future to sort of be in a starting lineup. But, yeah, for now, you know, if you're Reggie Jackson, you just got to be looking at the situation like, you know what, worst case scenario, I play behind, you know, an incredibly gifted backcourt. Best case scenario, you know, I'm going to get extended minutes while those guys are recovering, and it's the regular season. So, you know, it's a win-win for Jackson and for the Thunder, I think. But, yeah, I guess for us, knowing how competitive he is, it's got to be frustrating. But if it's necessary, and I'm sure if you asked any, you polled any Thunder fan, I'm sure they would say, look, We'll bench Russ for now if it means we're going to have him healthy for, you know, April, May, and June.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to play a quick game with you. You have to tell me which player weighs more.
Oh, okay.
The first, and these are all teammates. The first is Avery Bradley or Jordan Crawford.
I'm going to say Bradley weighs more because I'm going to guess that he's more muscle.
It is Jordan Crawford by 15 pounds, 180 to 195. I thought that was surprising too. Next one.
Is just quickly, is there a height difference between those two? I would imagine that they're
relatively... 2-inch height difference, yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay. Fascinating. Good. I'm going to chalk that one down and impress my friends next time I'm chatting with them.
Carlos Boozer or Joakim Noah?
Oh, again, this feels like it's a trick question. I'm going to say Noah.
It's Boozer.
Is it really?
By 34 pounds.
Wow. See, that's an instance where I probably should have then referred back to, well, it's all muscle bulk, so by default, that's heavier. You know?
Isn't that crazy?
Okay. Really? Okay.
Hmm. The Greek Freak, who I'm not going to attempt his name, or John Henson?
Henson's wiry. I'm going to go Greek Freak.
It's Henson by 50.
Is it really? Okay. Again, that's pretty tight. It's pretty close.
And Henson's a few inches taller as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe not in wingspan, but yeah, definitely in height. It's, you know, There you go. There's an insurance policy for the Thunder. Maybe you can poach Greek Freak in the offseason.
That'd be awesome.
I'm sure Preston's working on something.
I'm sure he is. Omer Asik or Dwight Howard?
Ooh, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Howard.
It is Howard by 10 pounds.
Okay.
Which was surprising to me because Asik is bigger and Asik just looks huge. I don't know.
He's significantly taller. I think all of these claims since Dwight Howard's been a rookie that he's 6'11", 7 foot, whatever, is one of the greatest myths or lies in modern basketball history. I mean, Dwight Howard is 6'9" at best.
Yeah, there's no way. You just see him standing next to KD, and you.
Yep.
I mean, he's much taller than Dwight is.
Yep. And again, you know, there's these classic cases of KD is not 6'9" either. Like, let's not fool ourselves. But, you know, yep. That's what they want to list them as. Cool. But you're right. Isik is in appearance is much, much heavier, or at least much larger in frame.
Mm-hmm. Last one, Hashim Thabeet or Kendrick Perkins?
Oh, I'm going to say Perk.
It is Perk by 7 pounds.
See, that's the closest yet. Wow.
Yeah.
And he's all bulk, right? I've seen Perk in person, and that guy is just a mountain.
He's all bulk, and it slows him down like crazy. Brad, tell us how we can help you reach your goal for this book.
Yeah, the best way, the quickest and simplest way is to head over to Kickstarter, and you can go to the little search window, type in The Backpack Baller. Otherwise you can find me on Twitter at The Backpack Baller, and there's more than enough updates and posts with the link included. I'll share the links with you, via Twitter and whatnot, so you can share them with the listeners so OKC Thunder fans can get behind this. And unfortunately the time is running out, but that also doesn't mean the death of the book. It just means that particular avenue has been exhausted. But still 72 or so hours to go. So if you want to, have a nice, first edition, hardcovered, 250-page Kevin Durant book on the shelf, then by all means, head over to Kickstarter and pledge support. And look, I will just say that the best part is that there are funding and reward options for every budget. So, if you want to just sort of throw $5 at it to see what happens, by all means, you can go ahead. You don't have to back, as Rick Fox claimed he would, the Hall of Fame package, which includes, a custom-made wooden box with an individual number and a whole bunch of other goodies. But the cool thing really is that people who do pledge via Kickstarter will get their name and their hometown printed in the book. So that's kind of, I guess, a keepsake for Thunder fans to sort of know that they were able to help make the Kevin Durant book happen. And that'll then mean that Kevin and his family and his camp will forever know the people who have sort of gotten behind the cause. So, I guess this is something that is very people power driven, and there's a long, exhaustive backstory about how the books ended up at this particular place. And Kevin switching agents, three times in 2 years hasn't really helped matters, but, that's neither here nor there. The important thing, I guess, at this stage is that the book is there, and Thunder fans can definitely jump on board and support it by heading over to Kickstarter and pledging support. So, if you have a chance to do so in the next 72 hours, by all means, I say back it.
Yes, I already have. I've secured my copy, and I'm really excited to be able to get my hands on this thing. So, Brad, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. We'll put that link on our website as well. We appreciate you coming on, and we will talk with you soon.
Absolutely. Let me just say thank you for giving me this opportunity to chat. It's been fun. And drop me a line anytime, man. And I'll definitely make sure that you and the listeners are kept updated with the book, regardless of what happens, because I think that at some point in 2014, this project will become a reality.
Excellent. Thanks, Brad.
Appreciate it. Thank you.